AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Recession Podcast with yours truly, Jeezy, is a production of Black Effect and iHeartRadio. This is Jeezy, Grammy-nominated urban philosopher, philanthropist, and entrepreneur, and this is my show, The Recession Podcast. For years, I used my music to highlight the struggles and issues facing this country, the economy, politics, protests, mental health, and more. And now, strong voices are more important than ever before. On this show, I will speak to powerful people from all walks of life to have real conversations about change, perseverance, and hope. And each episode will feature a sample of a song from my new album, The Recession 2. So without further ado, let's begin The Recession Podcast. Let's get it. Today's episode is about prison reform, one of our biggest issues facing our country. According to the Brennan Center for Justice, Black and Latino men and women make up more than half of all Americans who have been to prison. One man who has been pushing to change the system is Van Jones, who you've probably seen as a host on CNN. He's also the CEO of the Reform Alliance, which is working to change laws and policies against incarceration. Before we hear Van Jones, let's listen to a little bit of the track from the Recession 2, my new album that inspired this conversation, Modern Day. Let's get it.
They say I fell off, I bounce back, I got it in me. Hustle fully automatic, though, don't do no semi. 7-day grind, theory, dog, hustle villain. That's why I got that thug motivation cross my belly. You confusing me with them, dog, must be a mix-up. Lots to celebrate, yeah, pull me up a big cup. Nigga, I ain't dead, I ain't in the penitentiary. All the shit I did, yeah, I could've did a century.
How you feeling today, brother?
Hey, look, I'm feeling good. Been a tough year for everybody. But, you know, breakdowns lead to breakthroughs. So everybody...
Love that. One more time for the people in the back. Breakdowns.
Breakdowns lead to breakthroughs if you use them right.
Right. Okay. And so love it. Love it.
A lot of us were in the hamster wheel. You know, we were just doing this because we were doing this because we were doing this. Yeah, like zombies. And then, you know, COVID hit, George Floyd hit, the election hit, and a lot of people are awake. I didn't say they're woke. I said they're awake. That's different. People are getting waking up now, not just to the external, but to the internal. Like, am I happy? Am I doing what I was born to do? Is this the life I'm supposed to be living? Well, now, once you get tens of millions of people, especially Black people, asking those questions, all kind of stuff becomes possible. So as bad as this year was, sometimes you need that to really, and I'm not talking about, you know, losing 300,000 people. I mean, that was not necessary.
Yeah, right.
But clearly the creator wanted us to stop what we were doing and pay more attention. And that's what happened.
I love that. You said the creator
and slowed us down so that we can see how we living, what we doing, you know, peel some of those layers off the onion so we can really see what's going on. And I truly believe that, brother, for the simple fact that a lot of people this year that I know personally, you know, us outside of the, you know, the deaths and everything that happened, said this has been the best year for them just in getting in tune with themselves and finding themselves and understanding what really matters. Because for a while, we all just thought all these other things matters. And when everything slowed down, it was like a reality check. And you know, that can only come from somebody up above. That couldn't come from us. So shouts out to everybody out there that's doing better. And we praying for everybody that we lost and everybody that's getting sick. But I had to ask you, because I've always watched what you've done, and I was just always intrigued. I'm like, is he an activist? Like, because it's like you be on the front line with a suit on. You feel me? It's just like,
yeah.
I just, you know, because it's like you hear your name and then you see the things that you do.
Yeah.
And you got to kind of just, you know, without digging too deep, like, where did that, you know, first of all, are you an activist?
Yeah.
And where did that come from? Like, how are you so, how have you been woke? And a lot of people just waking up.
Well, first of all, you know, Zoom world. So I apologize for these motorcycles are going past me here in LA. I don't know what's happening. Maybe it's a Trump
rally. they know what we're doing,
exactly.
Brother.
They literally just sitting right outside my place, just gunning the engines and stuff. It's like, but you're not gonna stop nothing. You're not gonna stop nothing. I tell you that. But listen, man. I consider myself to be an activist and advocate, and I always have been. I never had any intention of being a TV personality. That really wasn't what I was focused on. I was born in 1968. You know, so I'm 52. I'm in my early 50s. People don't understand what it means to be born in 68. That's the year they killed Dr. King.
Right.
That's the year they killed Bobby Kennedy. There was riots. The Chicago Democratic Convention was bloody. It was a year. I mean, you think 2020 was a big year, and it is a big year, but 1968 is right that kind of a year. Imagine babies being born into all of this right now. They're going to have a different mentality, because their kindergarten teacher is going to be different. Everybody's going to be different around.
Right, right.
And so for me, you know, I came into this world, you know, feeling very much aware of what the grown people were about, and they were still reeling from Dr. King. I decided that if you're a young person, I want to do something like what he had done as far as trying to help people. Mm. Went to law school, went to Yale for law, got out 24 years old, had dreadlocks down my back. It's 1993, a year after Rodney King, a year before the Clinton crime bill. There's a bullseye on the back of every young Black man for police brutality in the prison system. You can see it coming. And I got a law degree. I said, they should have never given me a law degree at 24 years old.
Wow.
I'm coming for their ass.
There you go.
So I started.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I started coordinating. This is in the 90s. I started coordinating lawsuits against police departments, just coordinating lawsuits against youth prisons. The organization I founded, the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights in Oakland, we wound up closing with our allies, 5 abusive youth prisons, stopped them from building a super jail for kids.
That's crazy.
All this is before I was ever on TV, just grassroots style. And also, don't forget, in those days, Democrats and Republicans were trying to build more prisons. California built more prisons than Texas in that prison boom. Nobody wants to talk about that.
Prison boom?
Prison boom. We went through a prison boom where it was constructing prisons all across America. It was like a building boom, just building prisons after prison.
And this was all for, because I want to make sure the people connect. So basically, this is a business.
Yeah.
They're building prisons because it's a business, and it's big money, and now all they need is people inside of it.
Exactly. And so you have an incarceration industry that was growing up in
incarceration industry
that was growing up in this country, and it was for people who look like me and you. Everybody knew, because listen, don't forget, I went to Yale for law school. I grew up in the rural South, went to public schools, and Black church on Sunday and all that, well, every other Sunday, but you know what I'm saying. So I grew up I grew up in the middle of the country. My dad grew up in Orange Mound, Memphis, the biggest ghetto in the South.
Oh yeah. Orange Mound. Yeah, Orange Mound, that's real.
Exactly.
So you Oakland and Orange Mound?
See, listen.
And Yale.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's a mix. That's a mix. That's a lot to deal with. So, my dad, he joined the military to get out of poverty when everybody else was trying to get out of the military. My dad, right. I'm going to go home. Right. He went, joined the military. He got out. He put himself through college. He married the college president's daughter, my mother, at Lane College. He knew what he was doing.
Smart man.
Exactly. So by the time I get to Yale, I've been raised by this, ex-military cop, educator, who's married to a college president's daughter. I was getting in no trouble. I was a nerd. So when I got to Yale and I saw these white kids and these rich kids doing all these drugs, committing all these crimes, they call it frat boy behavior, but if it's us, they call it gang behavior.
Right.
Same activity.
Frat boy, gang behavior.
Same activity. You run around, you're drinking, mm-hmm. you're doing drugs, you're mm-hmm. grabbing mm-hmm. women, you're breaking laws, mm-hmm. you're driving your car fast. But if you're white, right. it's frat boy activity. If you're black, it's gang activity. And so right. I watched that with my own eyes. When I got out of law school, I said, I wanted to fight. So I spent the first 10, 15 years of my life out of law school, suing cops, organizing against prisons. This is before it was cool, before it was popular, because Democrats mm-hmm. and Republicans were on the other side from us, mm-hmm. from our generation. Mm-hmm. Right. Bill Clinton and those guys, all the good that Bill Clinton did, he threw us under the bus when it came to incarceration.
So you mean to tell me you're in Yale?
Yes.
Right. You're in Yale and you're fighting for your people.
Yes.
While you're in Yale.
Yes.
And pretty much basically you probably, the minority in there is probably,
In fact, the crazy thing about it, even the black students were embarrassed to have me there. Because
are you serious?
Because they're like, who is this guy? But you don't forget now, you have African American, folks who have done well, but they went to Andover and Yale and Harvard and Brown and Oxford and all these fancy schools. I'm coming from the University of Tennessee at Martin. I didn't even say University of Tennessee at Knoxville. I said at Martin, little campus nobody's heard of. Right. And I'm showing up at Yale for law school. They only have 120 people in our class. 10,000 people applied to get in. They landed 120 out of 10,000. Of the 120, I think maybe 18 of us, 17 of us were black. So you had a very small number of black folks in the school. And then I'm the only ones that not come. Well, there's another guy came from a normal school background. Everybody else coming from these fancy backgrounds. So they're looking at me, you making us look bad coming up in here, country. Militant.
You got that Tennessee slang.
Exactly.
You from the Bay, Bay, they got a little extra sauce in them. And you got dreads.
And I had dreadlocks in the 90s. And don't forget, in the 90s, wearing dreadlocks at an Ivy League school was unheard of.
Right.
So I was way out there. But why? Because I had seen too much bad stuff growing up in the South, growing up on the edge of a small town. I had seen too much bad stuff to go for the okie doke. And so I really want to use my degree to help people. The ironic thing, I wind up living as if a lot of my guys, I went to Yale Law School, they want to be in government. They want to be in high offices. I wound up working in the White House. That was never my goal. There were people I went to school with who wanted to be on television and be in the public eye. I wound up on television. That was never my goal. My goal was trying to help us at the grassroots level. But sometimes, if you do your work right and you continue to learn and grow, opportunities show up and you go through doors you didn't even know you were going through. And I looked up and what happened was, I burned out, trying to, obviously going to a lot of funerals. You work in Oakland, dealing with young people, you go to a lot of funerals with young people in the caskets and people with gray hair sitting up in the pews, the opposite of everybody else's neighborhood. Everybody else's neighborhood is the gray folk and the kid folk in the casket and young people in the pews. Our community is the opposite. You can only do that for so long before it gets to you. And so
I've been there.
And so I started trying to get jobs for these young folks. We're getting them out of jail, but they weren't getting jobs. And so they're going from the youth system into the adult system. That's depressing. So we decided at the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights to try to get them jobs in the solar industry, putting up solar panels. And so you think about that. Now you're solving two problems. You're solving poverty. and pollution. You're dealing with two issues at once. Nancy Pelosi's 2007, she had just become the Speaker of the House the first time. She got so excited about what we were doing, she brought me to Washington, D.C., and we got George W. Bush to sign my bill, the Green Jobs Act, to spread my program from Oakland across the country. Next year, I wrote a book about it called The Green Collar Economy. The book became a bestseller. A guy named Barack Obama reads the book. I went up in the White House.
Wow.
From the literally from grassroots activism to the White House in about 18 months. And so and so then after that, once you've been in the White House, you can be on TV. None of this was in my plan. It was God's plan. It wasn't my plan.
You know, what's crazy is because, you know, they say that, like, you did the work. It had been tested. You tested people. You was already connected. You had personal relationships with people. Anytime you start talking about actually going to funerals, that means you're a man of the people. Like, you care when they're here and when they're not. So, you know, if anybody like Barack sees that, he has to know that that's a clear line to the streets that he's not going to have. And by the way, you're packaged right. You're coming in a suit. You know what I'm saying? You ain't coming like you're from Orange Mound and my folks by way of East Oakland. So you ain't coming like that. You coming as, you know, actually, I graduated from Yale and I did a few things and I'm here. So that's the dope part. But speaking of school, and you said that inspired you to get out here because of what was going on at the time when you was, you know, Martin Luther King and all these different things. What do you feel like now with these kids nowadays, seeing the young kids seeing this? You know, if you're 7, 8 years old and you're watching TV and you're asking your dad, why are they killing black men? Yeah. Why are they killing people while they're in their bed? And do you think that would that breed or fuel some new activists for this generation?
Yeah, I mean, you can already see it happening. I mean, absolutely. Right. And I mean, we had, you know, in the 1990s, we had one videotape, Rodney King being beaten by four white cops here in LA.
Right.
He survived it. But we had never seen, you know, now everybody's got these cell phones, you can videotape anything. Back in those days, it was very rare to have a video. Very rare.
Right. Social media had a lot to do with what's going on now because it pretty much, and going back to your point earlier, is that now, you know, it's exposed.
Yeah.
Like, we see it. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas when we were coming up, everybody knew about it, everybody talked about it, we couldn't prove it. So we,
right,
you know,
right,
you know, you had NWA coming out, F the Police.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right. And it's so crazy that we were listening to this NWA, Tupac, Public Enemy, but we was listening to it as music.
Yes.
And I was as a kid. I didn't know that this was really going on and this is what was really happening. That is powerful.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, between, you know, 89, you know, when Do the Right Thing came out, Public Enemy really was everywhere at that time. So there was a consciousness of it, but we had no proof. And then suddenly you had one videotape in all of America.
Right.
Because video cameras were not common. It was very, very unusual for anybody to have a video camera and then to use it to help us. And then not to just record your, I'm going to record my kid's, you know, birthday party to help us.
Right.
That was unheard of. And so when that video came out and TV chose to show it because they could have buried it. And then they had the trial and the cops got acquitted. And it said, hey, you know, it's all right with us. Beat the hell out of these black people. We don't care. You had riots from coast to coast. L.A. burned to the ground. And I was 23 years old. I was still in law school saying I'm here supposed to be learning about liberty and justice for all, but I'm not seeing that. So I know the impact that one videotape had on me. I know the impact that one bad case had on me. You got a whole generation. They see a videotape worse than that, dag them near every day on their phones. So you're by having a system this unjust and not correcting it, you're throwing dragon teeth out into the farm, and you're going to grow dragons.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you think that since they see it so much, is that desensitizing?
It could. That happens. But I also think that them and their peers know that there's an unjust system. And you have to understand throughout the Western world, and certainly here in the United States, every kindergarten, I don't care if you are in Germany, I don't care if you're in London, I don't care if you're in L.A., I don't care if you're in Iowa, damn near every kindergarten now looks like the United Nations. You got every color kid,
I agree.
A mix of that and a mix of this and some of these and some of those.
Yeah.
I'll tell people all the time, your grandkids are not going to look like your grandparents.
Right. It's a different world.
So you have a whole crew of people, and they're all coming up seeing this injustice, which means when they hit being adults, they're going to vote different. They're going to buy different. They're going to think about things different. They're going to hire different. So they may be sensitized, but they're also... That you can't put that toothpaste back in the tube. They know what's going on. Black, white, brown, and otherwise, they know.
Right. And you're absolutely right, because now where I went to school, you know, it's pretty much predominantly Black. But now, you know, you dropping your kids off, it's kids from different countries. It's different. So they have another group of friends, and they have a different group of relationships and people that they'll grow with that are actually from different cultures. So they understand it better. So they're not looking at it how when we grew up, it was just Black and white, you know what I'm saying? And there wasn't nothing in between. And you can actually see that these days because, you know, their friends are, you know, Black, Asian,
Persian,
Indian, Persian,
El Salvador,
they speak different languages. And to double down on that, what I did see during the pandemic that I was just like sitting back like in awe was when things happened with George Floyd and it just got out of hand. And like you said, it was that one videotape. I watched the world embrace our problem. I watched people from London, the UK, Australia, all these different places that I wouldn't even think that would understand start marching and using their socials to speak up on what was going on. And I just thought that was just, when I sat back, I was just like, wow. Yeah. Like everybody for once sees that we really have a problem. And it's not just our problem anymore. You know what I mean?
You know, if you think about a Dr. King, and you think about this summer of 2020. If you look at the polling data, probably January, if you ask majority of white folks, do you think that anti-Black racism is a real issue? And do you think the police need to be reformed? The numbers would have been very, very low in terms of even well-intentioned white people. They just don't live it. They don't think about it. It's not their thing. And so then by the time you got to July, August, September, polls show about 20 million white people changed their mind and put anti-black racism near the top or at the top of their list. Now, hold on a second. Dr. King never had a summer where he picked up 20 million new people. I mean, even Dr. King never had that summer. And so you can't even get your minds wrapped around, because don't forget, Dr. King, when he died, he was very unpopular. When he died, they said he was a troublemaker, blah, blah, blah.
Right, right.
I mean, he became more popular in death with his wife and Stevie Wonder and other people making sure that everybody knew his name. But when he died, he was considered one of the most unpopular people in the country. He had come out against the Vietnam War. He had come out, you know, the war on poverty. People were saying he was a socialist, he's a communist. He was getting destroyed in the press right before he died. So even Dr. King never had a summer like Black Lives Matter. Black Lives, from a public consciousness point of view, you've never seen anything like it. Now, how you translate that into bills and laws and changing behavior, totally different.
Right.
The people who grew up and who came of age and looked around this year and saw COVID taking out Blacks and Latinos way out of proportion, because we are those essential workers, those frontline workers, not paid like we're essential, but then in an emergency treated like we're essential. They saw what happened with those videotapes. And don't forget Christian Cooper, just a regular old nerdy Black guy in the park trying to, you know, watch birds in Central Park.
And the girl with walking
the
dog.
White girl said that, you know, I'm being attacked by a Black man, blah, 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 please come help me, help me, help me. People saw that. That was the same day.
Right, they started getting exposed. So they started getting exposed.
So now you're seeing a Black, well-mannered, nerdy bird watcher, damn near, you know, he could have gotten killed. And then you're seeing, you know, the other side of the tracks getting killed, and people, and you had a captive audience. Everybody sitting home because of COVID.
Right. And they had everybody sitting still, and they got nothing to do but watch.
Like in Clockwork Orange.
You can't, and you can't turn your head from it, because I feel like just even sitting back watching the news, I mean, you couldn't hide from it. It was everywhere.
Yeah.
The George Floyd video was extremely powerful. The Breonna Taylor case was captivating just to watch how the district attorney was handling things. Like, it was just so real. And, you know, when you sit back and you got to really think, is that God's work? Because COVID really stopped time for us to get a reality check and say, okay, this is really happening in real time. What are we going to do? Yep. And speaking of that, when Biden won, I saw you get really emotional, and I just really wanted to ask, what did that mean to you? Like, what was that about to you?
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, I've worked successfully with four presidents. You know, I got Bill Clinton to, not myself, but me working with my peer group of young actors at those days. We got Bill Clinton to close an HIV positive prison camp.
Hold up. So this is not a prison for people who committed crimes that had HIV. This is a prison for people who had HIV that you're putting in jail because they have HIV.
Yeah, Haitian refugees who were fleeing butchers and dictators in Haiti. And they came to the United States, or tried to come to the United States, rather than us welcoming them in because they were Haitian. George H.W. Bush stuck a needle in their arm to figure out if they had HIV. And if they had HIV, rather than bringing them to the United States to a hospital, they stuck them behind barbed wire and razor wire on Guantanamo. I work with students across the country to get that close. So that's Bill Clinton, work with him. I told you, I got George W. Bush to sign my Green Jobs Act. Obama hired me. And then I even got Donald Trump to sign the First Step Act, which was a criminal justice reform bill that even the New York Times says was the most substantial breakthrough on criminal justice in a generation at the federal level. So I've worked with Trump and Jared Kushner and Ivanka, all the people who we talk about, I talk to try to get our people home from prison. And we got 15,000 people out of prison doing that. And the federal prison system is now 17% smaller than it was when Trump went in. So I work with those folks. I got victory with those folks because I'm gonna fight for our people. I don't care who the president is. Right. And if you're in prison, you didn't get a chance to vote for anybody anyway. So why should you suffer? Right. Now I'm not nobody's gonna go argue my case just
because he's in office.
He's in office. Right. I didn't have nothing to do with it.
Right. You know? Right.
So I took a lot of heat for doing that, but I would do it again and again because, you know, for people in prison, they don't care who's in the White House, they want to come home to their mama's house. They deserve to have an advocate. That said. A lot of the things that were happening in the Trump era were, you know, bothering me. But, you know, you wind up dissociating. Same when you work in the hood. You know, you go to enough funerals, enough stuff goes down. You don't really grieve every person who dies the way that you would if only one had died. You know what I mean? It's just the way that it is. And so I kind of dissociated. And by the time it got really announced that Trump was losing, that we're going to have a different president, my phone started blowing up. All my Muslim friends, all my immigrant friends, all my, you know, friends who are close to communities that, you know, have been the target of Trump's, you know, vitriol all these years. And they're so emotional. And I'm on live TV and my phone, and I'm like seeing my friends, you know, like just having this conversation on my text messages. And then somebody said, "I'm not crying, you're crying," you know, sort of like,
right.
And all of a sudden, man, it just hit me like, man, what we've been through, and to have this burden off everybody's shoulders. And, you know, people in New York started going crazy immediately. I mean, it was just nuts, you know, just, and I was in New York, and just like the relief and the joy, and it just got to me. And I wasn't expecting them to come to me at that moment. So I was in my feelings, you know, cause they were talking to Jake Tapper in a whole different studio. So I'm just there, I'm sitting next to Anderson. I'm looking at my feelings, you know.
It's real. It's happening.
Exactly. And then they came to me and Anderson, okay, well, man, how you feel? I had some very smart notes about, you know, the different numbers or whatever. My eyes were full of tears. I couldn't see the notes. And I'm like, oh, I'm trapped on national TV in a moment, you know?
Wow.
And so, I just started talking about my children. Whatever came to mind, it just came out. I talked about my homeboys are Muslim. You know, I got finished talking. I stopped.
Right. That was that unscripted moment where it went viral. I was like, I said, when I see him, I got to ask him. What happened?
Yeah. It was just, look, if they had given me a minute to get myself together, I would have said something that maybe it was more buttoned up, but maybe it wouldn't have been as impactful. Sometimes you just gotta let your real. So, I mean, that wasn't my plan, but sometimes you just have to let your real heart show.
No, that's exactly because I felt you, and I spoke with Tamika Mallory, and I asked her, "Did you write this speech that you went and talked about?" And she was like, "In Kentucky," she's like, "Absolutely not." First thing that came to my mind and my heart, and I said it. So we commend y'all on just standing up and just speaking the truth about this. But I'm hearing you say these numbers. You saying you got how many people out of prison?
15,000 out of federal prison alone.
Federal prison alone. Now, where I'm from, when you go to federal prison, is like the worst. Like when you hear you going to the feds, it's a wrap. Like everybody know you getting crazy time. Like you just don't give me no federal charge. And where I'm from, we never even heard of someone being able to get out of federal prison early unless they tell or unless they work a deal with the government, and you know that's forbidden and just where I'm from, so I'm not speaking for everyone. So to hear this, because I had so many, I mean, like just the funerals you're talking about, you know, if not double, and the people that's in prison, so many that I know personally that, you know, you just kind of charge it to the game because it's like, okay, they got caught up, they're gone, they're going to be home 10, 15, 20, 30 years. It is what it is. But, however, hearing you say this, kid in college that had dreadlocks from Oakland and work your way into the White House and got to a position where you can actually go get tens of thousands of people out of prison. And for all of us who are sitting here just watching this in awe, like myself, explain what prison reform is, because this to me is like mind blowing. You know what I mean? I'm just being honest, like mind blowing.
Like I appreciate you. I think you're the first person that ever interviewed me to ask me about it. I mean, you're asking me about it, and I really appreciate it because they either ignore it, you know, or they say it's not good enough. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And so it's like, right. And I'm like, well, hold on a second. First of all, don't act like I was born at CNN just doing interviews. You know, I love CNN. Hey, listen, I've interviewed Jay-Z. I've interviewed Oprah. Right. I love that career. But that's not all I am. It's just a guy on TV. You know, you see me on TV for, you know, 6-7 minutes talking to Anderson Cooper or Don Lemon or Jake Tapper or Aaron or any of them. That's 10 minutes out of my day. The rest of my day, I'm working on our causes. And I'm using the fact that I'm on TV. A governor will return my phone call faster now because I'm on television than when I was working at the grassroots level. A senator or a judge will return my phone call. And I'm using that to help build organizations and try to help get stuff done. So they ignore all that. They just wanted me to be the guy who's on TV. Or they say, well, you know, you got 15,000 people out, but there's still 180,000 people in. Right. And I'm like, yeah, but for that 15,000 is out.
They sleeping, they at home at with home, their families.
Right now.
They got another shot at life. And by the way, I don't know how many of these people who are saying something to you been to prison, but them days in prison are very long.
Yeah, very long.
Very long.
And bedtime is no joke. And then and it's not just me. Listen, I'm a part of a whole team, you know, the Reform Alliance, which, you know, JP and Meek Mill and Robert Smith and a bunch of others, Michael Rubin. Help to get started. I work with a great team of people, lawyers like Jessica Jackson and Aaron Haney and others. And I've helped to build organizations, you know, the Dream Corps in Oakland, which is led by Nisha Anand. So I can give out names. No one person does what I'm talking about, but I play an essential role because I do have that national platform. And so when I open my mouth to say something about police and prisons, and when CNN let me do a whole series, The Redemption Project, 8-part series. Mm. You can find it on the Dream Corps website, but just put in Redemption Project, 8-part series on restorative justice, going into the prisons, people who turn their lives around, who never get the microphone, people who were doing bad and now are doing amazing, who never get any attention. CNN let me do an 8-part special, put them in prime time. So I feel like I'm somebody who, my tools are different in my 50s and my 20s. Access points are different. The way I have to play my game on this side of life is not the same as when I was running out there cussing folks out and doing sit-ins and stuff like that. And Mark, I don't do it that way. I do it slightly differently. But I feel like I'm trying to solve the same problem, which is we are never going to be free. We are never going to have our dignity. We're never going to be able to prosper. Our genius will always be less than it could be as long as they are filling up these prisons, this incarceration industry with our people.
And this is for their personal gain because this is business.
Yeah, because it's not making anything any better. And they don't do it to their kids. When their kids are on drugs, they don't say, well, here's 17 years for you. I've never met anybody who said, my kid's on drugs. I want them to do 17 years. They only do it to your children. It's always when somebody else's kid is on drugs. Well, they're a drug dealer. My kid is experimenting with drugs. Your kid is a drug pusher. Well, hold on a second. The video camera showed them doing the exact same thing. How come your kid's experimenting and needs to go to drug rehab and my kid is pushing and needs to go to prison? The only thing different is the color of their skin. And so this is something that, you know, like I said, I you know, people get confused because they say, well, you know, he's working with Jared Kushner, he's working with Trump, he's working with these Republicans. Please understand, 80% of Black people are locked up in states that are either run by Republicans, red states, or half run by Republicans, purple states. 80% of our people, the person with the key to the lock is a Republican. So you can't just be woke and only dealing with Democrats and progressives and leftists, revolutionaries, and Black nationalists and Marxists and anarchists and think you're going to get nobody out of prison.
You got to politic. You got to make sure.
You got to be able to deal with all sides. Yeah. So then what we do is, you know, on Twitter, you'll get destroyed for doing the thing that's saving your people. And you get praised for doing the thing that's not making any difference at all. So I can tweet all day and say how much I hate Republicans, but I'm never going to get nobody out of prison doing that. But if I say, hey, listen, this governor did something good, even Donald Trump did something good, keep doing more, and I'm getting more of our people out, I'll get damned by Twitter. I'll have hip hop stars come out and say Van Jones is a sellout. But look at the people I'm bringing home.
Right.
The people who are saying everything you want to hear, great, they got good rhetoric. Where are their results? So at some point, we have to, as Black people, be as sophisticated as the system we're trying to change.
It's crazy that you say that, man, because, you know, and as long as you have your mission and you understand what it is you're doing, people are never going to understand how you get it done.
That's right.
But those people that you bring at home, if you sat them down and asked them what they've been through or how they was treated unfair, they're going to speak. You're talking about human lives. And my thing is like, you know, another man's opinion is never reality to me, because it's just like people will sit there and talk and say, okay, you're selling out, you're not doing things, but you're actually making progress. Yeah. And if you got to go sit down and talk to somebody that we don't even agree with to make the progress, as long as you're not throwing any more of us under the bus, what does it matter? You know what I'm saying? Bring them home. And I'm speaking for all of us, because I'm seeing the many tweets where they're talking about free my little homeboy, Roro, free this one, free that one, free that. We trying to get them free. You know what I'm saying? So what you want us to do? You want us to leave them in there, or you want us to get them free? You know what I'm saying? So if we got to go talk to
somebody. Never met anybody in prison who said, hey, Ben, get me out of here. And Lord knows, I spent more time in prison as an advocate, as a journalist, than anybody that I know. And I hate, right. And every time I come out there, I have to just sit in my car and just, you know, just think about it and just, you know, thank God, but also just, you know, God, why is it we still in bondage? But I've never met anybody behind those gates, never met anybody on the other side of that barbed wire who said, Ben, get me out of prison. I need to come home. I want to be with my baby. I want to be my baby mama. Get me home. But don't work with any Republicans.
Right.
I've never had that conversation. Right. In 25 years, I've never had that conversation.
Whatever you do, don't talk to them.
Exactly.
You know, I stay here another 30 years exactly. If I got to. Exactly. But I ain't going out like that.
Nobody has never, not one time, never said
wow, that's
so
crazy.
So when they be tearing me up on Twitter, I just say, listen, if you're on Twitter, I'll tell you this, you're probably not in federal prison, because they usually, you know, unless you got a sneak phone.
And by the way, if they on there and they got a sneak phone, they trying to tweet you. Come get me. Come get me.
Yeah, man.
AT&T connects and ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let me ask you this though. So Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
What she's doing is dope. And I hear your name affiliated with hers a lot. And I commend what she's doing, because she's using her notoriety and everything. Would you be considered like her mentor? Did she come to you, or you guys just, you saw what she was doing and you guys just connected? How did that work?
Look, she was moving on her own.
Okay.
She was moving independently. A woman named Topeka Sam, who should be a legend, black woman, did Fed Time, came out. She's helping people, saving people, trying to change laws, she's amazing. Topeka made sure that the video got made and put out publicly about Miss Alice Johnson, who was a legend behind bars and who everybody was hoping Obama would let out. For whatever reason, Obama didn't let out. Kim had no connection to anything or anybody, but she saw this video that Topeka made about Miss Alice Johnson. She just couldn't believe that a black woman, this saintly, this beautiful in terms of just her heart and everything she'd been doing, was not going to ever get home, even though she's a first time offense, and she's going to be in prison for the rest of her life. She's going to die in prison. Wow. Kim said, well, I know Ivanka Trump. Let me pick up the phone and call Ivanka Trump. So on her own, she didn't need anybody to push her, just based on her own heart and her own connections, she got into motion, Kim Kardashian, tried to save this black woman's life. Mm-hmm. And then, but I had also been working with her. And so our paths crossed in that. And look, I've taught Kim one or two things. Kim has taught me three or four things. I mean, she very effective. And people think she's doing it for publicity. Here's what I know. 95% of the stuff that Kim does for people behind bars is never in the press. She is 100% committed to making a difference for people. And by the way, people say, well, you're praising her and you don't praise black women. When I praise a Topeka Sam, it doesn't make the headlines. Okay, when I praise a Brittany Barnett, it doesn't make the headlines. So when I praise our people, people just assume a black person praises, but when I praise a Kim Kardashian, she's famous, so it makes the headlines. But Kim Kardashian will tell you the roll call of names of black women that she's learned from and worked with. Miss Alice Johnson, being first and foremost. So again, I'm gonna tell the truth whether you like it or not. We got one celebrity, Kim Kardashian, who was willing to walk in the Trump White House. When Obama was there, every celebrity was up in the White House. When Trump got in there,
everybody fell back.
They didn't want to take that smoke. But Kim Kardashian was willing to do it. I will always salute her. I'm not taking anything away from anybody else. But I'm going to tell the truth whether you like it or not. And the truth is, she's been an unbelievably effective advocate for this cause.
And by the way, if she, I'm just going to throw this out there. You know, she ain't talking. She gets see murder out. Ain't nobody gonna have nothing to say. The whole New Orleans gonna be with her. You heard me?
And by the way, and people don't take this away from her either, because she's got four black kids.
Right.
I don't care who you are. If you're raising black children in America, that's gonna change. Now, that means it's gonna get you all the way right. But you're gonna get some of the way right just on the strength of having four black kids in America.
Right. Well, I'm a firm believer, if you're doing what's in your heart and is right and you're helping people, it don't matter what who and what you are, as long as you're, because she could be home chilling.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? You got to put her name on none of that. You know what I'm saying? And I'm even saying the C. Murder part, because a lot of the world had forgot about him.
Yep.
But just by her being involved, it gave him hope, or anyone like him, a small bit of hope while he's sitting in that cell. And we all know that the New Orleans and Louisiana prison system, you're talking chain gang days, what happened in Mississippi, and my guys Yo Gotti and Jay-Z got involved, and it's crazy because I had friends, I got guys from Mississippi I know personally that would send me videos of people getting stabbed and killed, and some even people had firearms in prison in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how do you get a gun in jail?
Right.
And what is that? What is that? What type of system could that be? You know what I'm saying? So when you think about that, and they had to go in there and basically shut this prison down. Mm-hmm. So I commend that, because you got people's brothers in there, their uncles, their daddies, their cousins doing time. They just want to do their time and come home. And now their life is in danger because of how the prison is being handled. Yep. And when COVID hit, it was even crazy, because a lot of people that I know was texting me like, yo, you won't believe what's going on in here. They leaving us in cells with people that are sick, they have COVID. Yeah. They're not giving us masks and this, that, and the other. And I had people DMing me, telling me about all these different stories. So I'm going to say, as long as y'all fight for us, we with you, bro. That opinion, when people get too opinionated and they ain't putting no work in, I don't know how to respect that.
I appreciate it. And Reform Alliance worked with a bunch of prisons, the Correctional Leaders Association that runs the prisons. We work with the National Governors Association to get people out. We got about 70, in addition to 15,000 I was talking about, We got an additional 70,000 people out ahead of COVID trying to save lives. And we also got Jack Dorsey from Twitter gave us money at the Reform Alliance to get masks in. So we were getting people out masked in. You know, and so now I wish we had gotten, you know, all of them out, but we did some. And that's what you just have to just do what you can, do what you can.
So 70,000, so y'all basically got them out of early release?
Yeah, compassionate release, early release.
Okay.
And you know, and
how do you even process that many cases? Like who goes through the cases?
Well, you know, what we did was we came up with a framework, a policy framework, and we got it. We got the National Governors Association to adopt that framework and then get it to the governors. And the governors had their staffs at the prison level running. Now, and no one governor adopted all of our recommendations, but a lot of them adopted pieces and parts, and when you add up all of those moves that all those governors made, wound up being about 70,000 people who came home early.
What's up.
You know, so,
I know one of them personally. One of them personally.
And that's the thing. Like, and I know we can't talk forever, but that's the thing. I want to encourage everybody under the sound of our voice. Everybody can do something. Right. I first got out of law school. All I could do was protest and file one lawsuit. Now I'm in a position I can work with, you know, all 50 governors and the president, and we can, you know, move stuff in multiple states simultaneously based on the team that I'm a part of. That took 20 years, 25 years to get from point A to point B. But whoever you are, wherever you are, you can do something. And it's better to do what you can do than sit up here and criticize other people for what they haven't done, because nobody's eating based off of your soundbite. People can't eat your sound bites. They can eat based on what you do to help.
Right. And that being said, let me ask you this last thing. How do you feel like we make a difference and we can be effective in this time? When we go into 2021, what could we actually do to be effective as a people, as a culture, and as a country?
Well, I mean, a couple of things. First of all, you know, just having a heart to be helpful means a lot. Intention matters a lot. Knowing that you have it in your heart to be helpful matters a lot. And then there's a lot of things that can that would bring people together that we don't talk about. Poor white folk and poor black folk got 85% the same problems, but we vote against each other, talk against each other, move against each other. That only helps the people at the top. And I've done stuff in Appalachia. I've done stuff in coal country. I've done stuff in the hood. I've done stuff in Native American reservations. And 85% of it's the same. You know, we have to deal with more racism than they do. But you know, hungry is hungry. You know, being in a food line is being in a food line. You know, being on WIC or whatever, all that's the same. And so I think we need to try to really, I always say, common pain should lead to common purpose. That's my thing. And so look for those areas. What do we have in common? Addiction hits both communities, black, white, red, blue, brown, whatever color you say. Mental health hits both communities. We have a suicide epidemic in the white community. We got a homicide epidemic in our community. That's all about
mental.
Yeah, our mental, trauma, you know, the different people are going through. The belief system that we have about ourselves is, we don't deserve more. You know, if you're doing one micrometer better than your cousin, you've made it and he ain't shit. When both of you could join forces and rise much higher.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's called generational wealth.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So there's a lot of stuff, man, that I feel, you know, my dad grew up poor in Orange Mound, like I said. And then, he said, nobody can give you anything that'll stop you from being poor. They can give you money, they'll stop you from being broke. But if you're still poor in your values, if you're still poor in your skill set, if you're still poor in your education, if you're still poor in your self-love, you're still poor in your relationship with God, you'll be broke again tomorrow. So the only way you stop being poor is you develop your internal self-love and capacity and education and continue to develop yourself. So then nobody can ever make you poor again. It may make you broke again. You might lose your job, but you won't be poor. And so we have to fight poverty, which is spiritual poverty, material poverty, you know, self-love poverty. We have to fight poverty with everything that we have, because when that poverty is the enemy of genius. Everybody is born with genius. Everybody is born with a gift that only they can give. And I don't care if you have a trillion more years of the universe, you'll never have you again. You'll never have your child again. That is the one time in the history of the universe that this expression of God's genius is here. To do anything but help that flourish is a sin. To put that in prison is a sin. To label that the N word and to exclude, that's a sin, because this expression of God is never coming back. And so we have to fight that poverty, because poverty is the enemy of genius. And anything that's enemy of genius is a sin. Genius is just God's best expression coming through you, as only it can through you. And so, you know, for me, they say, well, why do you spend so much time, you know, in prisons and in the homeless centers and in Appalachia and whatever? Because that's God's genius just as much as what I saw at Yale. That's God's genius just as much as when I was teaching at Princeton. That's God's genius just as much as when I was a fellow at MIT. It's God's genius just as much as when I was at CNN or White House. It's, and frankly, more genius. I've seen more genius behind prison bars. I'm so, sometimes I walk out there in prison bars, I was like, if these cats was really given the opportunity,
right,
I'd be working for them and be proud to have the job.
Imperfect leaders is what they call them.
Imperfect leaders. But so, so I don't mean to preach, but I just want people to understand. When you see me on there, like you said, I'm buttoned up, I'm trying to say it proper, but I come from our community. I come from, I am the person that they say, if we could just get public schools working, if we could just get a scholarship to public schools, if we just have affirmative action in these fancy schools, what could somebody do? You're looking at it. What you're fighting for, you're looking at it. That's me. Just,
right.
You know, just 30, 40 years later. So,
without the dreads.
Without the dreads. But, you know, when you see me making my movies, oh, I don't like he's doing that, he's doing that. You don't have to do that, but make sure you're doing your part correctly, and we can meet around the barn door how they used to. They used to, okay, look, you tell Master this, and you tell Mrs. that, and you, that's how it's supposed to be, not killing each other on social media and trying to destroy each other because somebody said something I don't like, or you know, why did Ice Cube do this, whatever. Listen, let's get behind the closed door and have those conversations. Let's figure out how we can put each other in different positions, and like you said, build that generational wealth, unleash that genius, and keep on growing. We're not here for much time. Trust me when I tell you, in my 50s, I was 20 years old last weekend, and now I'm in my 50s. It goes like that. Let's not waste time tearing each other down. Different people will use different tactics and different tools, but most of us are trying to help Black people.
Love it, man. Listen, brother, we needed this. We needed these gems and these jewels.
Yeah, bro.
For my guy by way of Orange Mound and Oakland. You know what I'm saying? So when you see him, know that.
Know that.
And you know, just keep doing what you're doing, man. And just, you know, just freeing our people and just fighting for us, because somewhere out there, that's somebody's cousin that just came home. That's somebody's father that just got, you know, freed early because of COVID. Yeah. And you know, and we gotta all understand that. Everybody doesn't fight the same way. And as long as you're using your platform and your relationships to work towards the good of the people, it shouldn't matter anyway, because we all got one mission, and that's to put us back where we need to be. Yep. And ladies and gentlemen, thank Van Jones for stopping through the Recession Podcast. I had to call a friend and knew a friend and say, yo, Van, we need you to pull up.
Hey.
And he did that, brother. And I'm here. Let me know how I can help you. And if there's anything I can do, you know, just keep fighting for us out there. We need you, brother.
Well, we need you too. We'll stay together. And look, next year is going to be amazing. All these seeds that were planted this year in pain are going to grow next year in promise. So I appreciate
absolutely.
You,
brother. I see it. For sure. Be safe, man. Already.
Next time.
There it is.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Recession Podcast by Jeezy, a production of Black Effect and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.